guitar.
No fear. No political correctness. No wokeism. You're listening to Underground USA.
Thanks for listening, downloading, and sharing. My name is Frank Salvato. Evidently, we live in an age when the most ignorant and uninformed among us are now empowered to believe they are intelligent. Yes, this certainly applies to politics and the litany of social issues facing our country. But in this particular case, I'm referring to the bizarre and unfounded panic surrounding the upcoming solar eclipse on Monday, April 8th. Yes, that's right. The solar eclipse that will occur on April 8th is being deemed by some, and this is astounding, to be something of a state of emergency, as the imbecile in chief would say, no lie. Robert Malone writes at his Substack, which is linked over at undergroundusa.com, quote, "It turns out that around parts of the USA, there are empty grocery shelves, long lines for food, and queues for gas. After all, the April 8th solar eclipse could cause death and destruction. The National Guard has even been called to duty in Oklahoma. In fact, some local governments have been making emergency plans and preparations for months in advance. National Guard units and military installations have been called in and are involved to keep the people safe." Really? Has our society been so incredibly dumbed down? Have the imbecilic been so duped into believing that they possess intellect that we are reverting to the medieval days when uneducated serfs thought the gods were stealing sun from the sky during solar eclipses? As Malone alludes to in his article, a solar eclipse is not a national emergency. It is not a state of emergency, and it is not a local emergency. It is a naturally occurring event in nature. I'd say follow the science, but we all know how that went during COVID, thanks to a colluding and dishonest medical industrial complex. So there is no need to run to the store to fill your closets with toilet paper or your pantry with 99-cent packages of ramen noodles. You don't have to wrap your computers in foil, and you don't have to construct an eclipse shelter. The only thing you should do, and this is if you want to view the eclipse, is to take proper precautions for your eyes. Never look directly at the sun during any phase of the eclipse without proper eye protection. Use certified solar viewing glasses or solar filters specifically designed for eclipse viewing. Don't use sunglasses, smoked glass, or homemade filters as they don't provide the adequate protection. Be sure to supervise children closely to ensure they use proper eye protection or view the eclipse indirectly. Don't use cameras, binoculars, or telescopes without appropriate solar filters. If using a telescope, ensure it has a solar filter covering the front aperture. And be sure to keep your pets indoors during the eclipse to prevent them from looking at the sun. And be cautious of traffic and crowds during the eclipse event. We in the United States really have to start employing critical thinking skills as a constant in our lives, and we must demand that our educational system dispense with the installation of false self-esteem in our children. We need to return to the tried-and-true core curriculums of the past that taught a child how to think rather than what to think. Sadly, the Marxist-run teachers' unions will never allow that to happen, so we must take our children's education into our own hands. But I digress. There is no national, regional, or local state of emergency associated with Monday's solar eclipse. Take precautions for your eyes and the eyes of your loved ones, and enjoy engaging in the witnessing of nature. Trust me, you have enough toilet paper. Right after this morning's segment on America's Third Watch, broadcast on the Genesis and Salem Communications Networks.
You're listening to Underground USA.
I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. My main focus was to be the best I could be on the basketball court. The first inkling that something was wrong was I started to notice that I couldn't do things without losing my breath. I still didn't think that it was anything serious until I couldn't make it to the airport. Every like 20 or 30 yards, I had to sit down and get my breath. Every physical exertion seemed to exhaust me. I knew something was wrong, and then I went to a baseball game with some friends, and I couldn't deal with any exertion. And finally, I went from the baseball game to the hospital where I was diagnosed with AFib. When I first noticed symptoms, I should have gone to the doctor and told him what was happening. Instead, I tried to let it pass. It took me listening to the cardiologist to help me get it straight as to what I needed to do. AFib increases the risk of stroke about 5 times. So you need to go and find out what's happening. You need to know all of it and you need to deal with it. It took me a while before I got wise. The No Time to Wait campaign expresses the urgency that people need to find out if they have AFib. I want my experience to help others understand the symptoms of atrial fibrillation. I didn't pay attention to my symptoms, which kept coming and going, or discuss them with my doctor. Experiencing irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, or any other AFib symptoms, including shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness, you should talk to your doctor. When it comes to your health, this is no time to wait.
Insight, passion. AM 930, The Answer.
Happy Friday, Frank.
Mr. Kyle.
All right. Well, there's no shortage of stuff to talk about, that's for sure. 48 hours is what they're saying. We could see some kind of retaliation against Israel from Iran. What do you think?
It's an ongoing retaliation, isn't it? I mean, Hezbollah is an ipso facto faction of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. It's funded by Iran. It's fueled by Iran. And Hezbollah's been attacking Israel. So it's an ongoing thing. Now, with the drones, that could be an interesting development. We'll see how the Iron Dome actually does and other defenses that Israel has going on. But this war against Hamas has always very tacitly had Hezbollah in the mix as well. Will it go full force now? Who knows? But it is troubling. Hezbollah's, you know, they were the number one foe, deadliest foe of the United States up until Al-Qaeda got on the scene. So it's something to be reckoned with. Will this blow wide open in the Middle East? That's a good question, because the Biden administration is doing nothing to try to dial this back or help Israel win in a decisive, quick manner. They're doing everything to draw it out, and I assume that's because of the election. But, if Hezbollah gets involved all the way, it's going to be troublesome for the IDF.
Well, you know, John Kirby at the White House press briefing room tried to get us to have some cognitive dissonance, I think, in how they're going to change policies for Israel, but still never walk away if Israel's being attacked. You know, it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. And certainly a brand new front or an all out problem in northern Israel with Hezbollah, could trigger the need to step in. Although I think Israel can really try to handle things. But I mean, this can get out of control so fast, primarily because of the weird mixed signals coming from the American administration.
Well, it's a political stance that's coming out of Washington. They need to placate the people on the very far left of their party who are demonstrably anti-Israel, very pro-Hamas. And then they have to actually address the mainstream of all of the American people who are in support of Israel by a good majority. So, you know, they have a Janus face. They're speaking at both sides of their mouths in order to try to placate both factions of the electorate, and that never works. So, you know, Hezbollah gets involved. Israel has to go north. I don't see, besides that weird floating dock, the United States getting any more boots on the ground over there. I don't think Israel would allow it. But if Israel decides to unleash, this thing could go regional, and it's really not going to be pretty.
Yeah, you're exactly right about that. It's incredibly concerning. You know, what we're watching unfold, literally, I mean, we don't know what the next 48 hours will even hold or what the world will really look like. And I'm not trying to be overdramatic per se, but it's just that these kinds of events can move very, very quickly. And at the same time, you've got President Biden getting on the phone with Benjamin Netanyahu saying it's what happened was unacceptable. And, you know, Israel didn't target these aid workers. But yet the response from the White House seems to be, well, it's out. We're outraged. But they're our friends. They didn't do this on purpose.
Well, the Biden administration doesn't understand what responsibility looks like and accountability looks like. Israel made a mistake. The first thing it did was come out and say, hey, you know what? We made a mistake. It was a deadly mistake, and we're intensely sorry. The White House doesn't know how to compute that because they're never wrong. Every time they've made a misstep in the last 3+ years, they've always blamed someone else. So they don't know what accountability looks like. That's why they are maybe perhaps are outraged. But it doesn't resonate well with people who understand what accountability is. You know, in war, there is collateral damage. That's just the way it is. That's why war sucks. But when someone attacks you the way Hezbollah attacked Israel on October 7th, and you make a decision to go all in to eradicate the enemy, then you go for what we used to do as we did in World War II. We want unconditional surrender or complete obliteration. There's no halfway. There's no, hey, let's just have never-ending ceasefires. That's not the way that you protect your citizenry and win wars.
Yeah. When an appeals court steps in and cuts down your $454 million judgment against Donald Trump to $175 million, well, you start holding hearings. You start questioning the company that did the bond. You start looking into their details and the insurance and all the stuff, because otherwise it just wouldn't be much fun trying to get Trump, I guess. You know, we'll get back here real quick to what's happening internationally. But yeah, what do you think? I mean, they've got to go and see if they can scrutinize the bond now to see if they can find some flaw in it. Just never gets old, does it?
They're proving to the American public that this is a political move and not a legal move. They're proving it beyond doubt. Nobody else would question the bondsman. You know, especially with a number that large.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that puts the entire longevity of that bondsman on the line. You know, you can't fail this one. It's a good payday, you know, when all is said and done, but it could destroy this outfit. So why go after the bondsman to see who it is, and why would it matter? You know,
this is
blatantly an act of politics to go after a candidate for the president of the United States to scar him or remove him from ballots. And that doesn't happen in the United States. Why? It does, but it shouldn't. That's the stuff reserved for tin pot third world dictatorships. We should be embarrassed by this. And Democrats, if you're still voting D because it was the party of your dad, you have got to wake up, because this is tyrannical what they're doing. Whether you like Donald Trump or not is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. This is the bastardization of due process by politics, and you can't have that. It is a slap against the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. So if you're all in for this because you hate Donald Trump, you are so shallow in your thinking that you're willing to set the Constitution on fire.
Indeed. I know. This is, again, we're witnessing this, and the Biden administration and the far left, the people in the media, they just seem to think that, well, this is just normal now. This is gone way beyond the politics of personal destruction, you know, back in the Clinton days. This is just on steroids. And people will start to think, you know, there's no hope.
You think about how apoplectic the Democrats were during Watergate. What were they accusing Nixon of doing? My God, he weaponized the CIA and the FBI against a political opponent.
Yeah.
You know, so we have to impeach him. He must be removed from office. It caused the resignation of a president. We have this happening here where he's weaponized the DOJ for political purposes, and no one on the left seems to give a damn. Nobody on the left cares that the Bill of Rights is being shredded here. And you know, it's not just the right saying this. If you listen to Alan Dershowitz's podcast, he's up in arms about this, saying they're destroying the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. All of this is unconstitutional. And this is someone who's dedicated his life to the left. He voted for Obama twice. You know, so you've got to wake up. If all it is Orange Man bad, you've fallen for the propaganda, and you're willing to say the Bill of Rights, it doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't apply to certain people. Boy, that's very Knesset, very Kremlin. It's very Kremlin.
Yeah, exactly. And certainly the idea of tearing apart the Constitution is predicated on the idea as well that you have to completely discredit the Supreme Court, because they're the ones who are going to figure out what's constitutional, what's not. And it's not going to go the way many times of the far left, the way that they would want it to go. So they have to delegitimize the court. I mean, it seems like there's a concerted effort here in order to account for that kind of stuff.
The people on the left, like Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and AOC, and that ilk, they act like petulant children when the Supreme Court doesn't 100% of the time come down on their side. The Supreme Court has come down on the side of the left, you know, how many times? And the right goes, well, you know, the Supreme Court is the final say. We can try and retool the argument and get it before the high court once again to see if we can't do something about it, but they've ruled. So we have to live with that ruling. That's the law of the land. That's the way our government's set up. They're the final say. But the left? No. Let's pack the court.
Yeah. You know, let's intimidate the, you know, try to. Let's go to their houses and chant and stuff like that. It would never occur to me to do something like that.
Yeah, hold a press conference in front of the Supreme Court and actually threaten Supreme Court justices as the majority leader of the Senate.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, this, we can't have this. I didn't get my way, so what am I going to do? I'm going to lay down in the middle of the grocery store aisle and kick and scream and shout and push things off the shelf and throw a temper tantrum till I get my way. If that's the way that the left believes it's supposed to act in the face of an adverse ruling from the Supreme Court, then again, Democrats, you've got to look at how selfish and adolescent your leaders are. Because that's what they are. You can't always get your way in a representative republic, in a constitutional republic. It's a matter of compromise. That's what the framers had to do when they came up with the Declaration of Independence, which they had to do when they were at the Constitutional Convention. But somehow compromise is just too good for you today? You're so arrogantly self-righteous that you're correct 100% of the time, and no one who thinks your way is worthy of having a voice? How pathetic.
you're right. And it's not even just not having a voice, it's that you're anti-democracy if you are, you know, if you speak out against what the left really wants to do. That's why they're trying to hang this moniker on themselves that they're the Lord Protector of democracy.
Cool. Talk about telegraphing your actual intent. They're destroying democracy so they can say that they actually protect democracy? If our electorate has become that stupid that they can't see the gaslighting that's happening here on a very serious and large scale, I might add, then we're doomed.
Yeah, that's very, very powerful. It just seems like it's part and parcel of, you know what's been going on literally, let's just say, over the last 50, 60 years or so, as the left has been able to constantly chip away and or infiltrate, right, in terms of education, in terms of trying to change attitudes, and simply, you know, going on this notion that America's bad. And if America's bad, then if we're trying to shred the Constitution, do all this other kind of stuff, well, that kind of makes us heroes. You know, it's also twisted.
It's very twisted. And the fact that you've got, and I'm going to call them what they are, they're Marxists. You know, the Democrat Party is falling to Marxists. It's not the majority, it's the most vocal and the most relentless faction of the Democrat Party. They're Marxists. And this whole idea that the United States is bad and the Constitution is an antiquated document and we should retool our government and think more globally, yada, yada, yada. Why is everybody trying to get here then?
Well said. And because people do, they want hope. And that's what America's always represented. But I don't know, I'm getting pretty tired of people constantly downing it and unnecessarily so. You know, that's not acceptable.
Go live in Haiti if you hate it here. You're going to find out real quick the United States is pretty damn good.
No kidding. Earlier, we were telling our friend Chris Markowski, the watchdog on Wall Street, and I was mentioning to him about Ford, and Ford Motor Company is losing a lot of money, billions of dollars, as a matter of fact, they're losing. And they're going to lose maybe $5 to $5.5 billion this year alone on EVs. And the CEO of Ford comes out and says, well, we're not going to start releasing EVs until it's profitable. And I was just thinking what you said in the prior segment about the Marxists taking over the Democrat Party, basically. I mean, that's part and parcel. It's all about government mandates. You shall make this many widgets, and that factory is going to make that many widgets. It doesn't matter that the widgets go together or not. They're compatible. We just tell you what to do. That's kind of what they're doing with the EV thing to a great degree.
Yeah, and they use taxpayer dollars to actually support that move.
Right.
You know, let's subsidize these companies. Let's give tax breaks to these companies to do something that even they say it's not ready yet. It's not ready yet.
Right.
You know, I'm all for, you know, a more efficient fuel source for automobiles and homes and industries. I'm all for it. That's how you move forward in a society, is you look at innovations, you employ them. But you don't do it before it's ready. And you certainly don't bet the economy of a country on untested things. Did anybody think about the wear and tear on the roads with the heaviness of the batteries in the EVs? Because we certainly don't take care of our infrastructure now, even though we pass bills with infrastructure in the name. They just tend to be giant cash payouts to political benefactors. We don't make sure our bridges are good. We made, you know, the roads are horrible when you get onto the federal system. So,
right.
You know, what were we thinking? Well, we weren't. That's what ideology does. The people on the very far left, the Marxists who demand you will change, don't think things through. And if they do say they've thought things through, it's always to a utopian ending. You have to plan, and maybe this is just the fire service coming out in me. I don't know. But you always plan for the worst and then try to make that outcome better. You don't plan for the best and then say, wow, we really didn't think about that. You know, now we have ruts in the roads that are reminiscent of the wagon trains going down the Oregon Trail. You know, it's ridiculous that this arrogant far left Marxist contingent that is so arrogantly self-righteous in this country believes that nothing they can do is wrong. But that's what you get when you raise generations saying they can't do anything wrong. Got to get a trophy for this. Got to get a medal for that. Participation trophy. Your self-esteem, little Johnny, is the most important thing in the world for us. Don't worry about right and wrong or whether you failed. We'll get you into Harvard. Don't worry about the SATs. We'll just say that they don't count anymore. Write a nice story about how hard your life is and make sure you put it through Grammarly so it's punctuated correctly, and we'll get you into an Ivy League school so you too can be a blithering idiot with a degree that means nothing.
Well, you know, speaking of Ivy League, looks like Harvard is going to have all kinds of different graduation ceremonies. And all the different groups could have their own different thing. Again, it used to be, Frank, that, you know, we had, for lack of a better term, we just had more unity, only in the sense that we had a common set of values or foundations overall. But now all of that has been so disjointed, and it's been so become so disparate that everybody's somehow been victimized by this or that. And so that puts you in your own little niche, and you're going to stay there forever, and you're never going to be part of the greater whole. And again, that's just easy to divide and conquer at that point, too.
You know, that's the subject matter of the main piece over at undergroundusa.com today. It's yesterday was the 56th anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination, April 4th. And we have completely gotten away from the teachings that fueled the civil rights movement that made us actually look in the mirror about race in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s. We've gotten away from it's about meritocracy. It's about the content of your character. It's not the color of your skin. Now, it's about the color of your skin, regardless of whether you're an idiot or a mass murderer. It's all about the color of your skin for the left. And that's destroying the country. We have racism here. If you look at the University of Berkeley, who is banning Caucasians from a farm program on Saturdays in order to cater to people who aren't white. You know, I hate to break it to you, but, you know, white people are a race demographic. Right. So if you're discriminating against them, you're a racist.
And that is the definition. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you're one of the followers of Kendi, who's on the hot seat for doing nothing and being a fraud, or Robin DiAngelo, or George Yancey, if you're one of their followers, and you claim that, well, no, only white people can be racist, then you are a moron.
Yeah.
You know, you're a moron. If you're making decisions based on someone's skin color, you are, by definition, a racist. No matter how badly the far left wants to redefine that term.
Exactly right. Well, I'll tell you what, Frank, we got the phone lines lighting up. Would you like to take a phone call real quick?
You bet.
All right, here we go. Anthony. Anthony in Tampa. Good morning, Anthony. Welcome to the program. You're on with Frank Silvato.
Hey, good morning to both of you. Frank, so segue kind of what you're talking about just now. You look at the whole issue of the BLM. You recall when all the sports athletes bended their knees to cater to the supposed BLM that was supposed to be an assistance, a support for the oppressed blacks. Yet that turned out to be a little hoax because they pretty much pocketed all the money that was given to them for their own personal use. Nothing was projected to the underprivileged black communities. Now you look now with this, I'm going to use this young female basketball player in the NCAA, Caitlin Clark. Now you have black basketball players hurling all sorts of demeaning comments towards her because she's white and she's been dominating. And it seems like white athletes, and I would say progressive whites, are kind of bending backwards to show some kind of sympathy or try to identify with them, and in the process, they're surrendering their whiteness. And it seems like, where did this come from? How did it come to this point where now you have black athletes projecting racism towards whites, and the progressive whites are just kind of, you know, self-pity, or so, you know, it's embarrassing how it got to this point.
Yeah, good.
I think people need to, supporters of sports have to stand up and say, you know, enough is enough.
Indeed.
We're not going to give into this. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, Anthony. Great point, and we'll give Frank a chance to respond. Take care. We'll talk to you again real soon, Anthony. And yeah, Frank, what do you think? We got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think the word he was looking for was self-deprecating.
Yeah.
You know, the left in this country is wrecked with guilt for the sins of their fathers, that which they had no control over, and are embracing two wrongs to make a right. Where racism is concerned, you just don't do it. That's the solution. You don't do it. You don't just keep perpetuating it by flipping the victim from one side to the other. That's just stupid.
Very well said. And that's pointing out, you know, again, you got to call it as you see it. And that's exactly what's happening. But Frank Salvato, thank you so much. Really good to talk with you this morning. We'll look forward to talking to you again on Monday morning, my friend.
Stay low, my friend.
If you like the podcast, subscribe, leave a comment, rate it if your platform lets you. Be sure to head on over to undergroundusa.com to sign up for our Substack, which comes straight to you, circumventing the censors and the fact checkers, because we both know that they're worthless, and that's been proven over time. And be sure to pick up your copy of Nullification, the case for decentralizing the federal government, available in Kindle and paperback over at Amazon.com. You're listening to Underground USA. My name is Frank Salvato, and we will be back right after this.
This podcast is a production of the Compass Point Group.
When someone is having a stroke, every minute counts. Just as putting out a fire quickly can stop it from spreading, treating a stroke quickly can reduce damage to the brain. The clock begins ticking as soon as you spot the signs of a stroke, because some treatments can only be used if the patient reaches the hospital in the first 3 hours after symptoms appear. So don't wait. Call 911 right away and get the person to a hospital immediately, even if the symptoms go away. If you think someone is having a stroke, remember the word FAST. F is for face. Ask the person to smile and check whether one side of their face is drooping. A is for arms. Have the person raise both arms and see if one arm drifts downwards. S is for speech. Ask the person to repeat a short phrase and notice if their words sound slurred. And finally, T is for time. If you spot any of these signs, call 911 right away to get the person to a hospital fast. Strokes are medical emergencies. The sooner a patient gets treatment, the better their chance of a good recovery.